not the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Yeah, and it's not one of those spots because of me. I mean, there's so many people that have put so much into this place. You know, whether it's our administration, whether it's the student athletes that believe in this place, our fans, you know, they've created an experience here at Oregon that's really unique. Mm-hmm. And I'm lucky that I get to be a part of that. I get to kind of help keep the train on the tracks. You know, to accomplish a championship, it's so hard. It takes a lot of things working the right way, but it also takes a level of skill. It takes talent. It takes a team. And I think all those things can exist here.
Dan Lanning talking about the University of Oregon. And obviously the Ducks were at Big Ten Conference Media Days in Indianapolis. They had their own local media day in Eugene today. Here to talk about it, Tyson Alger, I-5 Corridor, who's been all over it, and he is in Eugene. What was the scene in Eugene?
Well, John, you know, they stuck to a lot of the tradition at Oregon Media Day. They had the similar setup with, you know, booths of talking to the players. They had Hawaiian food. They had Dan Lanning up there giving a little pregame intro. I think the theme this year is, to me, nobody's kind of like beating around the bush as to what the expectations are this year. I heard multiple people say national championship this season. The goal is to win the national championship. And, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily like strained from maybe what secret goals were in the past, but I do feel like that, you know, it's not always verbalized like that this early in the season, especially at media days like that. But I think this is a team and a program that is very realistic about its current standing in college football. I think they're very realistic about the roster that they have, and the opportunity in front of them. You know, that's something that Lanning did kind of caution about, is like, yeah, you know, there has been a lot of hype and we do have these goals, but you know, the thing that excites him the most is that they've put themselves in a position to have this opportunity. And then I think that's kind of what the theme was today.
Give me an idea, because sometimes people will talk about a national championship, but then you kind of go, they don't really believe it. I got the impression in Indianapolis that Dan Lanning believes, and that Dylan Gabriel, he's not here for 4 years. He believes. Did you get the impression in Eugene that there's buy-in and belief, that it's not just talk?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's something that you can go back at and look kind of like the first game that we were able to gauge Dan Lanning and his Ducks off of was that Georgia game 2 years ago, and that
good
was
Lord.
The one that afterwards.
Good Lord.
That was, and that was the one that Kirby Smart afterwards came out and said, you know, Dan's going to do a great job. He just needs better players, and he knows that. And, you know, at the time, Dan played that well and kind of said that we're going to take each game as it comes across. But, you know, one of the things that he told me a couple weeks ago is, like, his job since he got to Oregon was to, like, make that roster better, and whether that's through bringing in the depth that they need or developing the current guys that they have. You know, talking to players today, I mean, I was talking to Terrence Ferguson, who's a fourth-year returning tight end, and, you know, just seeing his body transformation since the time he's gotten here. Like, I would give him as a good counterexample to all the other transfer guys who came in who are expected to play and contribute right away. Like, it's they just have so much more depth on this roster, and I think they kind of just have, like, an understanding of what's expected of them, too. Like, it really felt like a professional media day today, and I think that's I think the Ducks are truly in a position where they believe, like, the work and kind of, like, the talent that they have on this roster to put themselves in that position.
I got a chance to sit down with Terrence Ferguson last Thursday in Indianapolis, and he is engaged to be married now. He had sort of this maturity about him. That, you're right, like, physically he looked bigger and better. Here he is talking today about the difference from last year to this year.
I think it feels different because we have a lot of veteran guys, and I think everyone's put their nose down and worked. I haven't seen a team work this hard in the offseason, and really, like they said, they compete. I think we have a lot of talent, and everyone throws the word talent around. But really, it comes down to, like, what you do with that talent and how hard you work. So I think everyone's done a great job of attacking the offseason, and we have all the talent in the world. So
here's my question, Tyson. You got a chance to talk with Dylan Gabriel today. I talked to him last week. You've watched him in spring game and practices. Are they better at that position? Are they as good at that position? Is that position a concern, or are you like, you know what, they're going to be fine there?
You know, it's hard for me to sit here and say that they're going to be better at that position, because up until the Washington games last year, I think Bo Nix was right in the discussion for winning the Heisman Trophy. They got excellent play from their quarterback last year. That being said, I think Gabriel is going to be better at coming in and being effective right away. Like, I do think that Bo took a couple games. You know, he played here for 2 years, and I don't think that people were expecting him to be a Heisman contender when he first got here. Yes, there's a lot of pressure on Gabriel. Like, he's as much of a proven product as you can get, through the transfer portal. But, just through the connection that he's developed with his receivers, the connection he's developed with some of those tight ends, I mean, especially with Terrence Ferguson. Terrence has gone with him to multiple camps. He's gone down to Hawaii to throw with him. Like, those two are talking with each other all the time. And then just, like, the riches that he has to throw to. The biggest takeaway I had from media day today, outside of kind of what the goals they were talking about, was just like how many good receivers they have, and just how different of bodies they have. Trayshon Holden and Jurian Dickey are one body type. Kyler Casper is another. Tez Johnson's another. They have so much variety, and so many, guys who can do different things, that I just think that Dylan Gabriel is going to be, unless something drastic happens, I just think that this is going to, I think he's going to instantly drop into being like one of those like super effective kind of start the conversation and keep it going quarterbacks that, it seems like there's only a handful of those in the country.
Tyson Alger, I-5 Corridor with us. You talked with Dante Moore. You wrote a great piece about him over the weekend. What did you learn in spending some time with Dante Moore?
Man, I was incredibly impressed with Dante. The reason I wanted to talk with him at first is because you have kids doing all these different NIL deals, and people sell merch, they sell shirts, they'll sell autographs. Well, Dante's selling a children's book that he wrote, and that just kind of really piqued my interest, because it just seems like such an interesting route to go down. And so talking with him last week and about his kind of journey out of Detroit and really being inspired by, the professional athletes who would come back and tell their stories, and the fact that going to UCLA wasn't like a perfect fit for him, and he was dealing with family issues. His mom had breast cancer, and obviously he was a 17-year-old trying to be a true freshman starter. There was just a lot of things that he was dealing with, and at the time he didn't think he was immature, but now that he's kind of had like a year to kind of rest on it and think about it, he said that last year was so transformative for him, for his maturity levels. And I think that's kind of what you're seeing a bit too, of he's a guy who's not going to come in and say that he wants to sit behind Dylan Gabriel and not play football, but I think he's also mature enough to like kind of view the talent that he has, view that last year wasn't an ideal situation for him, and just kind of like take a year to have, I don't know if reset is the right word, but just to kind of like take a step back and see where he's at and really put himself in the best position possible. And whether that's this year and in the worst case scenario, if Gabriel gets hurt, or if that's taken over next year as an experienced guy, or, as a guy with experience taking over the job from Gabriel in 2025, I think it's a player who really views this as a long game, and he's not necessarily just like trying to get what's best for him this coming year.
Tyson, I think Oregon's going to have a great season, and I left Big Ten Media Days last week thinking, gosh, Rick Neuheisel's picking them to win. They've got Ohio State at home. Could this be the year in year three for Dan Lanning that it just comes together? Like, the world of college athletics seems to, in some ways, have pivoted in a way that benefits Oregon just about more than anybody else. But I also am looking at Lanning and Tosh Lupoi as D coordinator and Will Stein on offense, and I'm going, okay, they get in a chess match with Ryan Day and Chip Kelly. Would you pick them? What do you think of the coaching element and how that may factor this next season?
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously that's still kind of a big question mark with the Ducks, because if you kind of go through the, what are Oregon's strengths right now, if you go through like the position groups, it's kind of hard to like point to something. And every year you don't want to come in with completely rose-colored, or in this case green-colored glasses on. And if you look at the last 2 years, some of Oregon's follies have been, choices that the coaching staff has made, whether they be fourth downs or what they go for or who's playing where. And so I think it's still I think it's still really hard to kind of grade how good they are compared to other staffs. They're still young in this, and, like, they have won a lot of games. It's just, like, our biggest complaint is in 3 years, like, Dan Lanning and the staff haven't made the playoff yet. Like, that's a load of expectations put upon them, but also they'll be the first ones to tell you that. They're aware, and they accepted those expectations. So, you know, I don't know if Will Stein's a better offensive coordinator at this point of his career than Chip Kelly is, but it's going to be fun as heck to watch, you know, especially with Chip kind of like putting the head coaching responsibilities aside and going back to what his roots are. There's a billion reasons why that Ohio State's going to be fascinating, and I think that's one of the top ones there. But I did see a list today, and you know, who knows how valid these are, but it was like top 50 coordinators in college football, and they did have Will Stein's name, I think, in the top five of that. So at least he's relatively respected in like that realm. I do think it is notable that this is the first time, and I think since I've been on the beat, that they've returned both coordinators again. So like having that consistency there, you did see Oregon's defense take a very large step forward last season. I think that Tosh and Dan are on the same page there, but yeah, that's definitely like one of those, like, we'll kind of figure out a little better once we get into the weeds of the season.
All right, let's look at the rest of the Big Ten, and then I want to pivot to Oregon State for a little bit. But, you know, we talk a lot about Ohio State and Oregon. Penn State's really good. James Franklin was kind of smiling like a guy he knows something the rest of us don't in Indianapolis. And I also am looking at Nebraska's going to be better. Oregon's going to have to go to Purdue and win on a Friday night. Purdue's not very good, but that comes in the wake of a big game, kind of sandwiched between two big games, a potential trap there. Where's the strength of the Big Ten? Is it a better conference top to bottom than the Pac-12 was, or just tougher at the top? What's your opinion?
I think it's a better top to bottom conference. It is easy to kind of have nostalgia when looking back at the Pac just because last year was like so good for it. But at the end of the day, it would be how many years was it before, like, where they had no playoff contender? It feels like unless it was Oregon, like the absolute top end of the Pac-12 was relatively limited. So I think, you know, I think being in a conference where you don't have to like have that when's the last time we made the playoffs thing hanging over you, like I think that's a big part of it. I agree with you. I think Penn State's going to be consistently solid. I think Wisconsin's going to be consistently solid. Nebraska's on the way up. Ohio State's a perennial national championship contender. Like the Pac-12 didn't have any perennial national championship contender. So yeah, I do think that. I think what I'm curious most is just like a sports writer who's cut this. Today was my 11th Oregon media day, and you kind of get used to like the ebbs and flows of a season, and you kind of know the high points and the low points. I'm really excited just to feel like get the feeling of what a Big Ten schedule is like, and just kind of like know how to adjust and tinker with your expectations as you know you have a Penn State coming up or a Wisconsin coming up or those teams, because it's definitely going to be a different vibe than you know your typical Cal or Arizona State or some of those schools that we kind of got used to or looked over in the Pac-12. It'll be significantly different.
Now Oregon will go to Ann Arbor to play Michigan. They will go to Purdue on the road. They will go to Wisconsin. Next year, they will go to Penn State in a game that could potentially be a whiteout. Do not root for that if you are a Duck fan. You do not want that game to be a whiteout. I think they've won five of the last six, knocked off five ranked opponents. It's not a basically you show up for dinner and you're on the menu kind of situation if you're a visiting team there. We're talking to Tyson Alger. So off to the other side of this Oregon Big Ten thing is Oregon State, Washington State, the Pac-12, a Mountain West conference schedule. What are your questions right now for Trent Bray and Oregon State?
Man, one, I want to know how good this defense is going to be again, because I mean it's easy with Jonathan Smith gone to Michigan State, and you look at some of the offensive players who left, who transferred, or you know Aiden Childs who went with him. I think it's easy to kind of forget that like the straw that really stirred the drink for the Beavers the last two seasons was just how effective they were on defense, and with Bray being elevated to head coach and having that continuity, is that still going to be something that you can hang your hat on? And I also just want to know, you know, let's say you become bowl eligible, if that's the goal, what does that mean to the people in Corvallis? Like I I want to know, what do they view this year as a successful season? Because I know it's definitely one of those seasons where they still want to stay at the forefront of college football. You know, they were talked about so much last season that I think the worst thing that could happen to them this year is if they just kind of have a national acceptance of where they're at. So I just want to know, like, how important do they view this very specific season? Because I think that this is still a very, very early and substantial chapter in what's going to end up being their long-term story.
It's a bit of a problem for them, too, because first-time, first-year head coach, it's not the time you want to be doing that, but that's the predicament they're in, because you want to win games right now and you want to stay relevant. So, yeah. Tyson, tell me if I'm wrong. I kind of think, like, they need to make a bowl game to stay relevant, given the schedule they're playing, even with Trent Bray kind of figuring out how to be a head coach. I think they can get to six, but who's playing quarterback is my biggest question, and if you don't know the answer to that, you're usually in a pickle.
Yeah, that's generally not like the best, not the most place of comfort that you're going to start from if you're going into a very important season and you're having quarterback issues. But, you know, it's they'll tell you we still have a lot of practices to go before the first game. But I mean, shoot, we're about to turn the calendar here this week. Like, we got games coming up at the end of the month, and it's going to become real fast here for Oregon State. And I'm just, you know, I feel like this is something that you and I have talked about in the past, like, the Oregon game shouldn't matter to how the Oregon State season goes this year, because I think Oregon's going to win that by 40 or 50 points, just because it's just such a sheer talent discrepancy this year. But I'm just very concerned for my biggest thing for Oregon State this year is to not let that game define them, because it's so early in the year, and it's going to come at a time too where, you know, hopefully the Beavers are 2-0 going into that game and have a bit of momentum, but there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on that game. I don't think it's going to go pretty for the Corvallis crowd, and that's not, you know, to throw any stones at Trent Bray and that program. They're just going through some things, and I think there's a lot to play for this season that doesn't involve the Ducks, and I just think just keeping that as the focus is important.
Oregon State's not winning that game. Conversely, I'm looking at the Apple Cup that same week, and I think you can make a case for Washington State to win that game on a neutral field with a whole bunch of returning players, a lot of emotion, Jed Fish in Washington kind of trying to figure out where they are. It comes at the wrong time for Jed and the right time for Jake Dickard's team, but I think you may be right. i5corridor.com, that's where you can read Tyson. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely, John, anytime.
There he goes. Really good piece on Dante Moore. Alger had it. You want to read it? Go to i5corridor.com. Coming up, I'm going to unpack just some final thoughts on Jonathan Smith's comments that he made to me last week. I'll give you the backstory behind the backstory on that conversation. But also, we will give you the big splash, the one thing you need to know. And then in hour two, Mike Yam, NFL Network, and the CW. He'll be the studio host on the CW. He's going to be joining us to talk about what that will look like and what the 49ers are going to do. They're in contract hell with Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams and Brock Purdy on the horizon. 49ers have some strategy. Plus, we'll talk about the Major League Baseball teams that are trying to win. Who are the buyers and who are the sellers? All that ahead.